Alrighty, well, we're underway. Election 2025, the federal election is underway. Just this past Sunday, obviously, the current Prime Minister, Mark Carney, it always seems a little bit weird to say that. In fact, just the other day, my kids were talking about it, and my wife was like, "Who's the Prime Minister now?" So it just shows you kind of how fast things have been moving a little bit. But federal election 2025 has been called. The deadline is April 28th, right? That's the. I think that's the day we go to
Monday
the
the
polls.
28th.
So things are going to move fast. We've got about 5 weeks or so between now and election day, and a lot of things have been happening. I don't know about you, but I mean, obviously, over the last, what has it been, 18 months or something like that, the polls have been looking like a conservative majority government. Things have been pretty steady in terms of at least people's opposition to Justin Trudeau, if nothing else. And then all of a sudden, in the last couple of weeks, I mean, just looking at the polls, it's literally, the parties have swapped positions almost in a matter of what, a month. I can't believe how fast that's happened, but maybe I just haven't, I haven't had my mind open enough to expect this sort of thing to happen. But what do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, it is interesting. Like you said, the polls had shown since about September of 23 that the Conservatives under Pierre Poilievre, they would likely form government, and almost overwhelmingly all agreed that it would likely be a substantial majority, what they were calling like a super majority, which would have about two-thirds of the MPs in the House. And like you said, in about the last 6 weeks or so, it's really shifted, and the conservative support has kind of gone significantly down. Liberal support has gone really way up. The reality is actually, obviously depending on the poll that you looked at, but the conservatives have only lost like maybe 6 or 7 points, which, yeah, still a significant amount. But the NDP has lost almost 10%, and has gone down from like 18, 19% down to
They seem
like
to be picking up all the seats from, a potential, or sorry, the Liberals have been picking up all of the seats that otherwise might have gone to the NDP, it seems like, right?
Well, between the NDP and the Bloc in Quebec, so
Right.
the Liberals have seen a huge resurgence in Quebec and Ontario primarily, and the Bloc has taken a giant hit in Quebec, percentage-wise as well. They've lost like 15% of where their vote was at, so they've dropped considerably as well. So yeah, in the last 6 weeks, since it became pretty clear that Mark Carney was going to be the most likely the new Liberal leader, things have kind of shifted in the Liberals' favor big time, and that's kind of where we sit right now. If you're following the polls, and I think polls, we should be careful with polls. Don't ignore polls, but that's what the polls are definitely saying. Incidentally, last time we had a very similar instance where somebody took the leadership just heading into an election. It was Kim Campbell is probably our best example, and there was a big bump for her before, obviously, a big loss, bringing the PCs down to about two seats
But I guess
in
there's a
the
bit of,
1993 election.
there's a little bit of, new person, new excitement kind of going on when you're looking at a situation like this. Because I think John Turner was another example of that prior to Kim Campbell, and not to say that that necessarily is going to replicate itself again this time around, but there's definitely that, here's the new person, he's bringing new ideas, a new face to the party. In some ways, I'm amazed at how they've managed to pull that off, and I think if you had asked me a couple of months ago, I honestly didn't think it was worth it, and I was a bit surprised that, considering the polls as they were at that time, that Carney would be willing to kind of give up his career as an international person to decide to run in sort of a messy political race at the head of a party that was doing quite poorly at the time. But somehow, they've managed to, at least in the polls, it looks like they've managed to swing that around. But that said, politics is fickle, and I think the reality is this is a long election. We're talking 5 weeks still. A lot can happen in 5 weeks. So things are not necessarily set in stone. But I think to your point about the polls, the reality is that while it might not have been a big swing in terms of the actual percentage numbers, the reality is the seat count is quite different now. If you look at some of the Canada 338 data right now, it's showing the Liberals suddenly in a majority position potentially, right? 178 seats, I think, is what it's showing today, which is over that majority line. So anyway, it's just, it means, I think, that Canadian politics right now is, the situation is quite volatile. It makes, you know, where we said the Ontario election was not all that interesting, I think there's a potential for this election to be very interesting. I think there's a lot riding on it. And obviously, maybe you could speak to the whole Trump situation. I know that that factors in here a little bit too, in terms of, you know, why people are voting maybe the way they are currently, or at least the way they're feeling. You know, sales of Canadian flags have increased in the last couple of weeks. You know, there's a sort of pseudo-nationalism that's reemerging. Maybe that's a factor here too. I'm not sure.
Well, and obviously that is what's at play. Like, we can talk about how polls, and we can talk about other examples of people like John Turner or Kim Campbell, but what they didn't have is what is, you know, obviously people are feeling like is a massive threat to Canada right now, and that's this talk about trade war, and that's definitely part of the conversation. A lot of Canadians look and say, hey, Donald Trump, he's the, you know, he leads the Conservatives in the U.S., Conservative Party of Canada. Well, we don't want what they have across the border. We don't want Donald Trump, so therefore we don't want the Conservative Party of Canada as well. Can't underestimate the amount of how that's playing into the mind and the psyche of people here in Canada as well. There's a very, you know, pro-Canada, very anti-Trump, sentiment coming out loud and clear amongst how Canadians are reacting because of all of this trade talk and trade concerns, genuine concerns. People have genuine concerns for their livelihood, and rightly so. And that's, You're seeing how that's kind of coming to play as well. People saying, hey, if that's what a conservative looks like, then maybe we don't want a conservative party leading the country here in Canada either.
Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting that Trump seems to not really care about what's going on in Canada, too. I know there was a conversation that he had with Laura Ingraham a couple of weeks ago in which he, and I know the Conservative Party have been sort of mentioning this comment as well, but that he was sort of saying, well, actually, it'd be easier for us to negotiate or to work with a Liberal government, potentially. Whether that means, I don't know what that means. Sometimes Trump says these things and just kind of throws them out there. But I think the reality is that it's clear he's not really interested in what's going on in the political scene in Canada. His thing is America first, you know, America centrist. So Canada's interests in this are not, whether there's a Conservative leadership or Liberal leadership, to him, I don't think it matters as much as, is he going to get what he's looking to negotiate on when it comes to Canada? So I think that's something that we're going to have to, as a country, absolutely, you know, keep in mind as this trade war, so-called, continues on. And I just hope that, you know, regardless of what happens, it doesn't result in us having to, either side having to pull the plug because, you know, we've run out of resources, or, you know, the average person is struggling to put food on the table, that kind of thing.
I think it's interesting that the differences between Carney and a guy like Trump couldn't actually be more stark. Carney is a self-professed globalist. Like, this isn't something that I'm making up. It's something that he espouses to. It's something that he talked about and has mentioned as he was campaigning to be the leader of the Liberal Party. And he, the first thing he did after becoming the prime minister is he made a trip out to Europe to, you know, build up relationships there, find other ways to trade. That's what he was up to. And so their mantra is very, very different. And so if Canada is interested in sending trade, like the Americans still want what we have. They just want it on their terms. And so if we're willing to work with them and work with them on their terms, then I guess Donald Trump doesn't really care who he's dealing with, because he's not concerned about us. He's not concerned about how we fare. He's concerned about America, and he's only concerned about America. So,
mm-hmm. But the implication is, I think, for Canadian politics, that the Liberals are sort of being forced by the political climate to look like conservatives, right? Mark Carney just mm-hmm. recently at least paused the tax on carbon, even though I think, I mean, you and I were talking earlier and you mentioned you'd been looking at one of his books and just the way that his carbon agenda, his climate change agenda is in every element of his policy, at least in the book he was writing. Maybe speak to that. And I think just the fact that the economy is forcing the hand of this election. So, and I think that makes it more difficult for the conservatives to position themselves as an alternative when the liberals are being forced to do the things that the conservatives have been saying they needed to do all along. It's kind of a weird situation.
Well, it is interesting, and this isn't new. This isn't a new thought. But something like worrying about the climate becomes a position that people can take if the economy is working well, if people are feeling good about where their financial situation, what their financial situation is. Then they can start looking at bigger things outside of their own home and say, yeah, I want to look after the climate. And when people are saying, yeah, climate change is a big issue, climate change is a big issue, we need to care about this, this is existential, this is what they're hearing in the news. The only time that matters is when somebody's personal finances are in a good spot. And what's happened in the last 5 years is we've seen a huge degradation in what's going on in people's personal finances. And quite frankly, people are saying, yeah, I can't afford to care about something like a carbon tax. It sounds great, sounds wonderful that we're saving the earth with a carbon tax. I can't do that because my groceries cost too much money. And so somebody like the Liberals and Prime Minister Carney, they're saying, yeah, no, we can't do this anymore. We have to change the price of carbon, at least what they're calling the carbon tax on individuals. At least we're going to have to drop that, and because it's politically untenable. So they've done that, but that doesn't change. That can't change where Mr. Carney stands on some of these issues. Quote from his book: "Net zero isn't a slogan; it's an imperative of climate physics. Net zero is now the organizing principle that cascades down from the global to the country and the company," end quote. That is a direct quote of his book. He's not going to just set aside that thinking. He might set it aside for some more popular policies, but he can't set aside that thinking because, it pervades everything that he thinks about how an economy must run long term.
So let's take a look now at some of the issues that we're concerned about as ARPA Canada, in terms of, regardless of which party wins this election, regardless of how this proceeds, and obviously each election, as ARPA, we put out an election guide, which will be coming forth in a couple of days, hopefully sometime next week, where we analyze all the parties across the spectrum. The Liberals, the NDP, the Conservatives, the CHP, and the PPC are typically the parties that we're looking at that engage on these issues, and just see where they stand and what the next 4 years could look like, depending on what government happens to be elected. So obviously, euthanasia is one of those. Pornography is the second issue we're considering. Abortion is the third. Free speech is the fourth. And sexuality and gender is the fifth. And I think it's important also to recognize the fact that if we're looking specifically to the issue of euthanasia, the Liberal government under Justin Trudeau have been the leading force in bringing about the euthanasia regime that we have in this country at this time. And it's also important to note that just because there's a new face at the beginning of that, or a new face leading that party, doesn't mean that the policies have changed. And I think we had optimism, obviously, that as a result of the bill that took place a little while ago to extend the waiting period until the mental illness component of euthanasia was brought into effect until 2027, we were expecting and there would be an opportunity to reverse that legislation entirely, to see mental illness no longer be a factor in consideration for euthanasia. However, David Lametti, who was the justice minister under Justin Trudeau, is now part of Mark Carney's team. I didn't actually double check which cabinet position he's in or what role he's filling, but the reality is it's a similar, David Lametti is an individual whose primary concern seemed to be, at least through that time, to make euthanasia as wide open as possible. He was in a podcast with a mainstream media host, and he basically said as much, that he would consider euthanasia to be something that should be available for all. So, Ryan, maybe you can bring up our webpage that we've designed for this purpose, talking about each of these issues. And our expectation, our hope for our supporters in this election is to see you engage with each of these issues and to Just have conversations with people, whether it's having a conversation with your candidate if you happen to run into them, if they come by your door, if they give you a phone call to see if you're willing to support them, maybe by sending them an email, sending an email to each of your candidates and asking them their position on these topics. And we've included in our handout, we've created a nice handout that you can print off at home that includes these five issues. You can go through the questions that are associated with that. So Ryan, we'll switch over to the screenshot. Maybe you can just talk us through what's going on there.
Yep. So it's very simple page that we put on the site to kind of walk through the different issues that we want to focus on. As Colin just said, we have five different areas of focus for us as an organization. And so I'll just kind of briefly go through them. You can kind of see they follow the same setup. So on euthanasia and medical assistance in dying, we outlay the issue here, what's going on, and then I'll underline here the fact that mental illness as a sole underlying condition is currently still scheduled for March 2027. Mm-hmm. That's still an issue that we'd like to see addressed, as you mentioned, Colin. Then we have a recommendation, what we'd like to see happen, at least in the short term, and then some talking points and then questions that you can ask. And so we follow this the same format for euthanasia and assisted suicide. We follow it for the issue of pornography. So that issue has been front and center for the last couple of years, especially around things like, hey, what can we do to protect children? And here we focus on, you know, ask the candidates if they will protect children through age verification laws and hold pornography companies accountable for breaking the law. We offer you some some talking points, and some questions that you can ask there. Same goes for abortion. Obviously, we need a law has a goal to establish laws restricting abortion. And recognizing humanity of preborn children. So again, talking points, questions. And we've covered hate speech as well. Hate speech was an issue that came up was front and center again towards the latter part of Justin Trudeau's time in office. He had a bill put forward, was the Online Harms Act, Bill C-63, that really was concerning around online harms and the penalties of having potential contravening this Online Harms Act. And so here, again, we want to ask candidates that their party not reintroduce a hate speech provision into the Canadian Human Rights Act that had been removed in 2013, I believe. And there was talk of putting it back in towards the latter part of Justin Trudeau's time in office. So, again, we provide you with some talking points that you can connect with a candidate on and some questions that you can ask them as well. And then finally, sex and gender. We do the same thing here. Focus here is Bill C-4. If you remember Bill C-4, this was a ban of on what was called conversion therapy. But ultimately, this Bill C-4 went far too far, and it included things like conversations between parents and pastors. And so we would like to see that repealed and that moved back. And so here's an opportunity to speak to this with some talking points and some questions, again, in an effort to have Canada's conversion therapy ban law, Bill C-4, removed and repealed so that it isn't putting parents and pastors in a bad spot. So very simple. We cover five different issues, providing you with information, talking points, questions that you can ask. And then that exact information is available in a handy download here as well, a PDF form where you can just print it off off your own printer and have it at the ready for when somebody comes knocking on your door or if you go to an all candidates event or an open house, or even like Colin, you just said too, send somebody an email and ask them in an email what they feel about a couple of these questions. I wouldn't recommend that you send the question and ask all 10 questions or however many questions there exactly are. Pick a couple. Maybe pick a topic at a time and send the questions out. And then that way you can kind of give it to people in kind of bite-sized chunks rather than having this big, big, long kind of questionnaire that you're coming at them with. So great opportunity to be equipped and be ready to engage and ask questions. So, you know, attend a debate, have a question at the ready when they go to the floor and you can ask a question there. So we really want to encourage people to pick this up, print it off, have it at the ready again when somebody knocks on your door or when you head on out to one of these events.
Thanks for running us through that, Ryan. Yeah, I think it's important also to note, and I don't think we have it on the website yet, but maybe we should add it in terms of the engagement that people can have with their local candidates as well. Find a candidate that supports the issues you're concerned about, that, you know, a candidate that you're willing to get behind, regardless of what party that happens to be. And you can volunteer, you can help out in different ways, whether it's with door knocking or helping hand out flyers or whatever the case might be. That's another great way to get involved in this election and to help support a candidate that you believe in. So I'd encourage you to do that as well. We'll try to get that checklist up on the website as well shortly.
So another great option that you can do to get involved in the election itself too is find out, like I mentioned earlier, find out when there's an all candidates event happening in your area. Often something places like chambers of commerce do these, or other organizations will set these up. But if there isn't one, find out if you can set one up. I mean, that'll take a little bit more work and a little bit more coordinating amongst you and your friends, but consider doing it. It's a really great idea. It's a really, really great opportunity to hear from all the candidates on different issues. And, you know, if you organize it, you know, these issues could also become front and center. At the very bottom of that page, perhaps I should have shown that to you, but at the very bottom of that, of our webpage, we give you a how to run a all candidates event as well. So there's a PDF on there that you can download and utilize as well to set up an all candidates event in your own area.
Very good. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week. So obviously this is the first of a series of election podcasts we're hoping to host over the next couple of weeks. We're going to have various guests on talking about various issues, both the policy specific issues, but also talking about the polls and any emerging news as it happens. Stay tuned over the next couple of weeks. We hope to have more for you shortly.